This is the Downeast Journal on Public Radio East. The Beaufort Inlet serves as the only thoroughfare for container ships to bring nearly 2 million tons of cargo each year to the Morehead City port. Keeping that channel open is vital to the region's economic growth. Every 3 years, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers dredge the Morehead City Harbor to allow safe passage for the large vessels. But now, proposed changes to where the dredged material may be deposited has Carteret County residents at odds. Mayor of the town of Atlantic Beach, Trace Cooper, says placing sand on Shackelford banks is unnecessary.
We've seen no documented benefit to putting dredged material there. It's a pristine national seashore, so we don't know what the goal there is.
As part of a federal requirement, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers must have an integrated dredged material management plan for the Morehead City Harbor to assess how dredged material is disposed of. When the Corps set out to draft their new 20-year plan, they sought the help of local, state, and federal agencies for suggested options. Chief of Environmental Resources for the Army Corps of Engineers Wilmington District, Phil Payonk, says the National Park Service, which is located at the Beaufort Inlet, was part of the planning process.
It was at that time that they realized that the resources that they manage were being affected by the dredging, and so they asked us to consider placement of material on Shackelford. This had actually been asked earlier when the harbor was first deepened back in the 70s, but at that time they chose not to pursue that option.
Dredging deposits have been placed along the Bogue Banks area for the past 30 years. Cape Lookout National Seashore Park Superintendent Pat Kenny says they would like to have the ability to place sand on Shackelford in the future.
And if we say no now to putting sand on Shackelford banks, then we would not see sand for the next 20 years. We have asked them to consider putting sand on Shackelford banks, and then the decision of whether sand gets placed on Shackelford will be looked at based on the science of the day and the needs of the park to ensure the preservation of the park.
The environmental impact statement for the Integrated Dredged Material Management Plan was released for public review, and so far no decisions have been made. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is accepting comments on the plan through February 2nd.
Following the public comment period closing, we will make a decision of whether we're going to move forward with accepting sand from the Corps or not accepting sand, or not being in the queue to accept sand is probably a better way to say it.
A public information session was held this Wednesday at the Duke Marine Lab on Pivers Island. Mayor of the town of Atlantic Beach and spokesperson for Carteret Coalition to Protect Our Shores, Trace Cooper, asked for the meeting to be held so Carteret County residents could hear details of the plan and voice their concerns. However, he says the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers are only accepting written comments.
We've requested public hearings so we can give our input on how our tax dollars are spent, and the federal government is basically saying, we're not going to let you speak. That's just unheard of.
Chief of Environmental Resources for the Army Corps of Engineers Wilmington District, Phil Payonk, says submitting a written statement is the best way to comment on the plan.
We want to make sure that we hear the public and hear them accurately and hear them correctly. We can best do that if they submit their comments in writing. And so then once they do that, then that becomes a part of our administrative record, and we are required under the National Environmental Policy Act to respond to those comments and to consider those comments in our final EIS, which will be prepared later.
Trace Cooper is among many Carteret County officials and citizens who believe dredging options on Shackelford banks could negatively affect the pristine coastline and wildlife.
It's a pretty intense construction process. There are large high-volume pipes, lots of heavy-duty earth-moving equipment, bulldozers and backhoes and trackhoes and things. It's not a very sensitive operation. And I know that the National Park Service doesn't allow dogs, for example, to run off their leash because of concerns for wildlife. I don't see how they can think that bulldozers and gigantic iron pipes are a good idea.
Navigation Project Manager for the Army Corps of Engineers Wilmington District, Bob Kessler, disagrees, saying the permitting process before an area can receive dredging material ensures minimum impact to the environment.
If the Park Service accepts material in the future, it would be placed seaward of the dune system in the ocean, and it's not going to cover any vegetation, so I think there'll be minimal impact to the environment. As far as, the horses and other, wildlife that's on the island, it would have minimal or no impact, I would say.
Carteret Coalition to Protect Our Shores spokesperson Trace Cooper believes the plan would have a negative effect on tourism, wildlife, fishing, and the wilderness character of this protected area.
Another concern with this plan is that it may affect the surf break at Shackelford, which doesn't happen often, but when it does, it's a pretty legendary spot on the East Coast. So it's, you know, as mayor of Atlantic Beach, I'm obviously concerned about Sam going to Bogue Banks, but as someone who's grown up going to Shackelford, you know, I want to make sure that it remains a pristine environment.
According to Park Superintendent Pat Kinney, there are two potential sites on Shackelford Banks that would benefit from the placement of dredging material. One of those sites is directly on the beach on the western end of the island, and the other is a nearshore area and waters less than 25 feet deep. While there is controversy surrounding the placement of dredging debris, Navigation Project Manager Bob Kessler says beach nourishment isn't the aim of the dredging project.
From our point of view, we're disposing of beach quality sand, and any incidental benefits you may get from building the beach is just that, an incidental benefit. And I do understand folks that have, you know, for 100 years, the federal government has been maintaining Morehead City Harbor, and material has been dredged and been placed on Fort Macon, Atlantic Beach, and even further, almost in every case, at 100% federal cost. So I do understand that's something that folks are used to, but just need to remember the purpose of the dredging project is to maintain the navigation channel, provide safe passage for the ships coming in and out of port.
The public comment period started December 6th and will run through February 3rd. Written comments can be submitted through the mail or an email address available on Carteret County's website and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Wilmington District website. After the final environmental impact statement is released, a record of decision document will have to be signed by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the National Park Service. The Morehead City Harbor Integrated Dredge Material Management Plan is expected to be completed in spring of 2015. To download the 300-page draft environmental impact statement and submit comments on the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers plan, visit our website, publicradioeast.org, and click on this story. The Succulent Seafood Series is underway at the coast. Chefs from area restaurants are sharing some of their recipes and tips for preparing seasonal, locally caught seafood. Mac McKee spoke with Special Activities Coordinator with the North Carolina Aquarium at Pine Knoll Shores, Wayne Justice, about the annual event.
Thank you for joining us today on Down East Journal.
My pleasure. Thanks for having us on. We're really excited to be joining you on the air.
Now, Wayne, how long have you been involved with the Succulent Seafood event? It sounds like a job I'd like to have.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity, and I have been associated with the aquariums programming as the program coordinator here at the aquarium for right at 8 years now. But the Succulent Seafood program is one that really was in place before I came on board here at the aquarium. We've offered this program now for probably the past 15 years.
As part of the Succulent Seafood Series, several area restaurants are serving up tips and recipes on how to prepare fresh local seafood. Now, are these restaurants primarily Carteret County-based, or are they from around eastern North Carolina?
Well, we're working with a local audience, and that many of the participants for this program are from Carteret County, and we try to keep the program within a short drive for them as we kind of have a regular following, but we're always looking to add to that. We usually do things in Carteret County, Onslow County, sometimes into New Bern and Craven County, and we're really open to the option of offering the program outside of our area. But in honesty, there's, of course, three aquariums in the state of North Carolina. We're centrally located here in Pine Knoll Shores near Atlantic Beach and Emerald Isle, but the Roanoke Island Aquarium offers a similar program up in the Outer Banks, and the Fort Fisher Aquarium has looked into offering a similar program down near Wilmington in New Hanover County. So It's really a regional thing that we do, really looking to partner and work with the restaurants that are here in our community.
How are restaurants selected for the Succulent Seafood event?
That's another great question. We try hard to choose the restaurants that have got a great reputation for using fresh local seafood in eastern North Carolina. That's one of the main things that we promote and advocate, is that it's so important this day and age for us to really look to the local source for our seafood consumption needs. And in reality, there's a lot of restaurants who serve local fresh seafood in Carteret County and Onslow County, and we have had no problems finding restaurants that were willing to participate with us. It gives us an opportunity to bring some of the aquarium crowd down to their restaurant and give them a chance to, you know, to dine in their event, in their venue. But it also gives them a chance to show that they are highlighting and serving fresh local seafood that's sustainably caught.
Not only is this event a perfect vehicle for promoting North Carolina local seafood, this is also a great event for other basic tourism industries in that it gives people ideas to travel to eastern North Carolina, specifically along the coast, that usually don't think of January or February a time to come to the beach.
Yeah, this program is one that we offer in what we commonly refer to as our down season. Of course, here on the coast, we see a lot of people who come down in the tourist crowd during the summer. But we really try to encourage people to recognize that the coast is a special place year-round, and especially with seafood, some of the shellfish and some of the other seafood items that we eat in the restaurants is, you know, seasonally available. So it's a great opportunity to remind people, you know, that seafood is a part of the reason that they travel to the coast. There was actually a survey that was done by some organizations not long ago, and it came to show that that's really one of the things people appreciate about the North Carolina coast the most. Not only our beautiful beaches and our, you know, wonderful aquariums, but also the things like fresh seafood dinners that you know, are provided to them, and that in some cases they can even harvest and capture themselves.
Wayne, what have been some of your favorite seafood dishes at the Succulent Seafood event?
This job for me is a great one because I'm a big fan of freshly, locally prepared seafood. Probably my favorite seafood to come from our surrounding waters is shrimp. I'm a big fan of shrimp, and doing this program, it's much like the movie Forrest Gump. You come to realize that there's so many different ways that the shrimp can be prepared and presented. But I'm also a big fan of our inshore fisheries, as I'm able to provide fish like speckled trout, flounder, and red drum for my family just from my own activities in fishing. So I like to learn from the chefs about those species as well. There's certainly a lot of people who appreciate shellfish. Oysters, clams are a popular menu item that we often see on the list, and we sometimes do underutilized species as well.
Have you ever had an unusual seafood dish that you didn't expect that pleasantly surprised you?
Yeah, as we start to think of those underutilized and kind of the unusual dish, the one that comes to mind top of my head is monkfish. A lot of people refer to monkfish as poor man's lobster. It's a fish that's caught off of our coast in deeper waters. They're ugly. I hate to say that all fish I know are supposed to be beautiful, but when you first see them, you know, you kind of question, is that what we're going to eat? But it's delicious. When prepared and served correctly, it's one of the best fish from the sea. You know, so it's a great opportunity to not only learn about the fish and seafood species, as we share quite a bit of biological information and information on the stock status of each species, but also just learning how to prepare and serve these species from the expert chefs that we partner with.
Wayne, thank you very much for being a part of Down East Journal today, and much success to you on the Succulent Seafood event.
Now, we certainly appreciate the opportunity.
The next Succulent Seafood event happens Monday, January 20th at 2 p.m. The featured restaurant will be the White Oak River Bistro. If you'd like more information, visit the events calendar at publicradioeast.org. The Down East Journal is made possible by our Public Radio East members in partnership with Vidant Health, proud to open James and Connie Maynard's Children's Hospital at Vidant Medical Center, offering more medical specialties, including neonatal and pediatric intensive care, cancer and kidney care, surgery, and much more. Online at vidanthealth.com/children.
Is the weekday commute getting to you?
I'm driving right now as I'm online. A propane tanker.
The office getting a little crazy?
I'm impressed, Miss Harrison. I never saw anybody hit an author before.
Well, just a little move we learned in biblio-taekwondo.
On-the-job perks getting smaller?
My very own three-hole punch!
Right. Escape from it all this weekend.
A Prairie Home Companion, Saturday evenings at 6 on PRE Public Radio East.
This is Ann Edwards, Horticulture Extension Agent, with this week's entry in the Garden Journal. Well, we had some bitter cold last week, as cold as it's been for quite a while. And if your yard's like mine, there's a few plants that took quite a beating. Don't be too quick, however, to go out and cut off all the branches that you think have died, or to take down plants altogether. Make sure you really know that the plant itself is dead, and not just the leaves or the tips of branches. For some plants, you might have to wait till this spring and see which branches do put out new leaves. Then you can go in and carefully prune away those that died. Now that we've had about a week since the cold hit, I can tell that the branches on my citrus trees, my tangerine especially, and my orange quats a little bit, have some tip death and maybe even branch death. That's because the leaves on those branches are turning almost white. But as I recommended, I'm not going to do any pruning right now because some of those branches may still have life in them. And I want to be careful not to cut back too much of the tree so that it can rejuvenate itself with spring leaves and the energy they collect from the sun. My tiny grapefruit tree, well, it was too young and too tender, and I think it might be gone. But I haven't had a chance to really get out and check it yet. It's turned pure white. At least from a distance, that seems to include the main trunk. If that's so, well, it's a goner, and that's a shame. But I knew that when I planted plants that are marginal for this area. If you look around your yard, you'll see many plants that did not get phased by the cold. That's because although it was an unusual cold for this area, it's not unheard of, and the plants that are highly adapted can take it and make it through cold periods like this. That's one of the reasons to choose adapted plants for your yard. It's a shame to plant all sorts of plants that you love dearly, but that really can't survive, well, a really harsh freeze like this, or maybe the heat of our summer, or maybe our beating sun, or humidity. Choosing adapted plants helps make your yard more beautiful and saves you the money of replacing them. But now and again, a plant is worth that extra effort. I figure my tangerine tree, when it yields beautiful, sweet, amazing tangerines, is worth knowing that once every 4 or 5 years, it might get cold enough to kill back some of the branches, and then I might go 2 or 3 years without a tangerine. But once the branches come back and the plant is healthy again and I harvest a basket of tangerines, well, I don't mind those years where I had a problem. If you are going to plant something that is not adapted to our area, be sure to find the place in your yard that is best suited for that particular plant. My tangerine tree is on the southwest side of my house, near the house in a protected area where it will get lots of sun, reflected heat, and is fully protected from the northeast winds. That gives it its best chance of survival, even in really harsh times. It's easy enough to find resources about each and every plant you're considering putting into your yard to determine if it's adapted to our area. You can look on our county website, carteret.ces.ncsu.edu, for lists of adapted plants that work well along the coast here of North Carolina, lists that our master gardeners have put together. There's also a university-based list with details about individual plants, and the university's in the process of updating those now. Putting a little time and research into the plants you might want to add to your yard this spring will save you time and money in the long run and make sure you have the most beautiful yard you want. But do like me and pick a few outliers that you just really want to nurture and put them in the best place you can. And I'll talk to you in next week's entry in the Garden Journal.
The Beaufort County Arts Council is collecting artwork from local and regional artists to display as part of an exhibition to celebrate the food traditions of Wayne County. This week, Public Radio East's Michael Peterson spoke with Executive Director Sarah Merritt about the exhibit, The Art of Food.
When I first heard about the exhibit, The Art of Food, I was thinking this was a culinary food show, but it's not. It's actually like a mixed media art display.
Right.
What types of work are you looking for?
We're looking for all types of mediums, and it's interesting that you ask that because I did have somebody else ask me that. I hadn't really thought of it that way. I guess, and then it does make sense, though. We're looking for all types of media. You know, it could be sculpture, it could be jewelry design, it could be painting, photography, textiles, you know, really you name it. We're open to it. And what I keep telling people is I want the artist to be creative and think outside the box. You know, it doesn't have to be a still life of a bowl of fruit or, you know, anything like that. It could be an abstract. It could be, you know, a painting of a field of wheat. You know, food is such a, it's pretty much open to interpretation. So I think it's going to be a really interesting exhibit, and we're already getting a lot of calls about it. So I'm excited. It's going to be really exciting to see what the artists bring us. So I did have somebody that actually asked me if they could make a work of art out of food, which I think would be interesting. Just as long as it's not perishable, I'm open to that as well.
What are the culinary traditions of Wayne County, and how do they differ from other places in eastern North Carolina?
Well, I think there are, you know, some traditional eastern North Carolina culinary traditions that, of course, Wayne County shares with, you know, the rest of the region. But for me, I think that the beauty of Wayne County is that there really is no set culinary tradition because it's such a diverse community. Because we have an Air Force base here, we have people from all over the world and across the country living in and making Wayne County their home for the rest of their lives, really, because we have a lot of retirees here, too. So I think that it's kind of a melting pot, I guess, for the lack of a better term, and that's, to me, what makes it such an interesting community. We have a really diverse taste in food.
Did you come up with the idea for this exhibit?
Yeah, I love to curate exhibits. I don't get to do it very often anymore, but it's been a couple years now, and I've was kind of, when I conceived of this idea, I was with a group of my friends, and, you know, when I, you know how it is when you get together with your friends or your family to celebrate something, there's always food. It's always something that everybody's excited about, and it brings people together. And I got to thinking about it, and I thought this would be a really fun exhibit that everybody has something or an opinion about food or a story, really cool stories about food. Everybody's got a connection to that. It's such a big part of all of our lives. I thought it would be it could be a really fun project for us.
How long will you be accepting work from artists?
Well, artists can drop off their work at the Arts Council of Wayne County Thursday, January 30th from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m., Friday, January 31st from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m., or Saturday, February 1st from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. And there'll be staff here to help them and take all their information.
When is the art exhibit going to open to the public, and will it cost anything?
So the food exhibit opens February 7th. That's a Friday. The opening reception will be from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. That's also coincides with the Arts Council has a First Friday event every month. So it's always a fun night. We'll of course have food, and we have, you know, studio artists that will have their studios open for people to tour. We always have live music, so it's just a really great night to celebrate, and I think it's going to be extra special with the food exhibit up as well. All of our exhibits and all of our opening receptions and all of our First Fridays are free, and everybody in the community is welcome.
That sounds great. Mm-hmm. As part of this exhibit, you're collecting recipes in hopes of making a cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to be looking to document the culinary traditions of Wayne County?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we're open to what people bring to us. Because I'm not a chef or a trained chef, I'm you know, a nonprofit arts council director. I'm interested. We're going to learn a lot. I think it's going to be a wonderful experience for the staff of the Arts Council as we collect these recipes to learn more about some of these traditions that we might not know about, and collect some interesting recipes and then be able to put them together in a cookbook and make it available for the community.
Sarah Merritt is the Executive Director of the Wayne County Arts Council. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
The Art of Food exhibit will open Friday, February 7th, and runs through March 21st. The deadline for submitting artwork is February 1st. If you'd like more information, visit the ENC events page at publicradioeast.org.